But then here, because like in the UK, there are like so many crazy titles, especially if you go to like Fordham and Mason's like online website, or like a posh kind of online website where they would have like Duchess. Like a Duchess could order some smoked salmon from there. It's amazing. And when it doesn't matter, I totally lean into it, which I think is mail fraud, but I'm also living my best life.
Did you just admit that?
Yeah.
On a public platform.
Lock me up. Put me in the Tower of London. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're celebrating International Women's Day. We talk stats, we highlight women we love in UX, and we talk sexism in design. So, ladies, happy International Women's Day. I need to know, how were your weeks?
My week has been absolutely great. I am finally employed. As a UX designer, and I'm really happy about that. I joined an absolutely brilliant team, and I feel like I'm gonna learn so much from them. I already know what project I'm gonna be on. They work in a very just different way to how we are used to working. So you work 1 week on one thing, 1 week on another, 2 weeks on another, and so on. It's quite unusual that they work like 6 months on a project. And I'm quite excited about that. I feel like I'm just going to kind of dip my toes in different things. It also makes me feel like I want to encourage more people, especially at the start of their career, to dip their toes into agency work. Because I feel like your learning can be accelerated simply because you have to do so many things. And yeah, I feel like our industry at the moment is skewed kind of by people's dreams to work for like Google and in-house in places. But yeah, I just want to welcome people to the world of the agency work, because I think there's so much to learn and there are some brilliant people. And yeah, I'm really happy. That's my week.
That's awesome. I think your point about working for agencies is really relevant and something I'm sure will resonate with a lot of people, because I think working in an agency means you get that breadth of work. You get to explore different clients, different industries, but you're also probably supported by a really great team of designers that you can learn so much from. And it's probably just such a huge change to being the only designer on, you know, like these massive projects and just having to wear multiple hats. I find that really inspirational. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much. How was your week, Yusin?
Not too bad. I think this week I've just basically been continuing my post-its. I did a video call with my mum the other day, and she was, I think, probably slightly concerned for my sanity. She was like, why do you have all these like post-its up on the wall?
Why is there red yarn connecting all of them?
It just makes me feel like one of those like police officers, you know, in a crime scene when they have to put these stakeholder maps or like these maps of suspects together and like just putting things up on a wall to try and organize their thoughts. Feel a little bit like that. But I think it's just been a process of trying to triage every single insight I've got from user interviews and try and distill it into a digestible version that I can play back to people on my team. So it's been a lot of refining that research and like trying to create insights on the product that can help us inform like the next couple of stages where we want to go with this product. I guess I've just been doing a lot of side projects, so this is one of them. But then I've been trying to design some screens for some friends for a volunteering project. So it's been a lot of just dipping back into Figma and getting used to some of the new functionality, because I've been using Adobe XD on my current work project. And I must say, I really, really miss Figma. Like, I think sometimes people say the tools you use aren't really that important, but it just makes such a difference when you have a really good tool, because then you don't have to consciously think about how to do something, you just know how to do it. And Figma is just so intuitive, and it just has so many different things you can do really quickly if you're creating prototypes. I mean, maybe for sort of like animations, it's maybe not as built out yet, but I'm quite positive it's going to catch up soon. And that's just been my week, pretty much.
Figma is bae.
Figma Maria. Did you see the new announcements with the,
no.
I think it's called Interactive Components?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't really got my head around it yet because I just feel like they're launching so many cool new features all the time. But I do know that Pablo Stanley, our favorite on this pod, has made a video of him like creating animations with interactive components. Ooh. I haven't watched the actual video, but I've seen a few like screenshots on Instagram and it looks really cool.
Wow. Oh. And you seem like so cool to hear that like the hustle is very real at your end. Like I love how much you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Lauren.
Amazing.
I try.
Awesome. And then yeah, from my perspective, this week I've been doing a lot of qualitative data synthesis, which for those keeping track at home takes far longer than you would ever imagine it to take. Just going through and coding a bunch of outputs from kind of interviews or our workshops. And then I've been working on a rainbow chart, which I've actually never come across. Do you guys know about rainbow charts?
Please enlighten.
Yeah, rainbow charts are really cool because they're a way to visualize all the themes from a qualitative data analysis. And you basically just have a column for participants, and then you've got a column of themes, and you just go through and you pick a color. So each participant is a different color, normally like of the rainbow. So your first participant is red, second is orange, third is yellow. And you go through the like list of themes. And if it's applicable, you add like a red square for the first participant. If it's applicable for the second one, you add an orange square. And so when you step back, you're able to see like which themes are really prevalent along a row. So it's just a really visually exciting way to display the data in a way that can be digested quite quickly and ultimately is like a really nice splash of color in an otherwise like black, white, and Microsoft blue kind of world. So I've really been enjoying that. And then on a personal note, I have been packing because I am moving flat soon, and I've been using Notion to keep track of like all the things I need to pack, all the things I need to order, all the things I need to organize, and it has been absolutely amazing. And I found that packing is actually quite easy if you organize everything in a box to begin with. So my moving will just be me picking up the boxes and leaving. So yeah, it's been a full-on week, but definitely a very productive one. So I'm very happy about that.
As you can tell, we really love our tools here. We love Figma, we love Notion. We'll probably do a Miro edition. Like,
they're so cherished.
Yeah.
Really. When tools work, they work.
I still remember your comment about how, like, I think we mentioned Figma and Notion and you were like, name a more iconic duo. And I think that's so true.
Definitely. When they do their job, it just works.
I also love the rainbow chart idea because right now I totally feel you. I think I've done like 9 user interviews. And just really looking for a quick and easy way to display those insights. What I've been trying to do is just write up key insights and then kind of pick quotes to support that. But I think having something like a rainbow chart is, like you say, really visually exciting. And also just allows you to see at a glance across all of your different participants what are the most common themes that are coming out. So I think I'm definitely going to give that one a go, actually. Super, super handy.
Yeah, definitely. And especially if you've got like stakeholders who are really like visual as well, it just really helps them to quickly kind of get an understanding of it. So could not recommend enough.
I love it. Nice. I'm always here for kind of a methodology, a template, something that makes our job easier. So thank you.
So ladies, speaking of data analysis, I would love to share some stats for you for International Women's Day that are related to women in UX. I'm going to start off with some good news. So I've done some research and I've actually found out that the field of UX design outperforms most other areas in tech in terms of gender equality. And actually some research conducted by Morgan McKinley found that women account for 41% of all UX designers, and this was a study focused like specifically on Ireland, because stats are actually really hard to find around this. But, you know, with the good news, I must share some slightly unfortunate news, which is while women represent about 41% people in UX, women tend to only represent 20% of people working in kind of the tech sector. So while UX is quite like like almost evenly split. Tech is not.
Yeah, I think that is, that's really interesting, because I feel like in UX design in general, or like product design, whatever you choose to call it, there are lots of people from diverse backgrounds, and that might account for, you know, why perhaps there's a more even gender split within UX. But I know that the wider tech industry is often seen as very closed off to women. I think a lot of people come into tech, right? People think of technical roles, or that you have to do STEM at university. And even, you know, at the university level, the ratio of women to men doing STEM subjects such as computer science, physics, and so on and so forth, I think it's quite tilted in favor of men in general. And that probably explains why in the general tech industry, not that many women are coming to look for jobs. I think there's been generally in recent years, like quite a huge push towards trying to get women more interested in tech positions, especially with all these companies creating their own outreach programs. I think in our company as well, there's been a huge sort of focus on trying to get women into the company at junior levels. But it just seems that as women progress up the ladder, people tend to drop off for various reasons, like maybe going on maternity leave or just having a general lack of like female role models. So I think these are some of the reasons that have resulted in somewhat of an imbalance in terms of gender equality in tech.
Yeah, super insightful, Yusin. I've actually got another unfortunate stat. So Tech Nation had a look at women in UX and like women in tech. And yeah, while there are only 20% women in tech, there's only 3% of women in tech who are Black or Hispanic, and only 5% who are Asian. So there's another area that I think needs a lot of work.
The intersectionality aspect.
It just seems that, you know, the numbers of women, especially those who are from ethnic minority backgrounds as well, are quite underrepresented in tech in general. So while the focus of today's episode is going to be celebrating really great women leaders in design, more generally, we're probably also going to have a discussion about how to think about diversity in design in general and in tech, and just how to make that a more accessible industry to lots of people from different backgrounds. I think ultimately that's so important within design a lot of the time, because, you know, we're trying to work collaboratively as a team and come up with new ideas, and it helps to have a really diverse group of people represented, because then each person can bring new ideas to the table.
I was also going to add that not having diverse designers means that we don't have the perspective of the diverse populations we're serving, which can be a problem in itself. I think what I'm wondering, and it's a question I don't have the answer to, therefore I would love to kind of hear your thoughts if you have any at all. So UX seems to be doing a lot better than other areas in tech. So 41% of the people in UX are women. I wonder what's different about UX compared to other areas. And so what are we doing well that maybe we can replicate in other areas of tech? And again, I generally don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah, great question, Lavinia. So I think because kind of the UX field is quite new, it's quite uncharted territory as well. So perhaps it isn't quite as gendered as other areas in tech. But also a comment that I saw on Charlie Marie's YouTube channel, because she made a video about this. Someone mentioned that because, you know, it's often like UX design, and a way in there is either from like graphic design, even like elements of visual design, that women coming through university feel more, or through kind of higher education, feel more included in design, and then might gravitate towards those roles when they leave university. So I thought that was like a really interesting perspective from one of her viewers.
Yeah.
But how about you, Yusin? What are your thoughts?
So I definitely agree with what you said, Lauren. I think, you know, it tends to be something that attracts maybe a lot of women already from other disciplines where, you know, there's a better gender representation like design. But I think also because UX is such a new field at the moment, and I think there's an active push towards, you know, just making it quite open and accessible to all, especially because UX is all about embracing the diversity of people from different backgrounds and allowing them to contribute their individual experiences. I think as a result, there's been an influx maybe of a lot of people from other disciplines, not just design, but also marketing, where I think, you know, there seem to be quite a lot more women in those fields. And as a result, I feel like because UX is seen as such a sort of like open space that people can come in, it's just not really as gatekept as much. And so I think that's probably why, you know, there's a fairer sort of gender ratio within UX compared to other places in tech.
Awesome. And speaking of women in UX, I know we have collected a fine list of women we personally love in the space. So speaking of women in UX, we have all chosen to highlight a woman that we personally really love in UX. And Lavinia, would you like to kick us off?
Sure thing. So this was actually quite hard for me. Initially, I realized that I was gravitating towards the women that tend to have a social media presence. And there obviously isn't kind of anything wrong with that. But then I kind of took a step back and I thought of the books I'm reading, the talks I'm watching. So I ended up choosing someone that I feel, although doesn't have like a massive social media presence, she's doing the work by setting an example. And that person is Katie Dill, who is currently the head of design at Stripe. And she, before that, she was VP of design at Lyft. And then before that, she was director of design at Airbnb. For the past kind of almost decade, has held leadership roles in some of the biggest kind of tech companies in the world. And she is a massive advocate for design in the boardroom. And I think that by default advances not only design, but also women in tech and women in design, because without having kind of design at the table, the part of tech that has the most women, I think obviously it is harder to get women in the boardroom. So yeah, she's not necessarily the figure that speaks necessarily on the topic. She is the person that kind of, I feel like, is doing the work. And she's really inspirational. I discovered her when I was listening to High Resolution, which is another podcast that was kind of like a limited series interviewing some of the biggest people in design. And I have a feeling she was probably the first one that was interviewed. And when you listen to her, she has this like amazing, calm voice. I feel like you can listen to her forever. And she's super knowledgeable. And I was finding myself like scribbling notes whenever she was speaking. So yeah, I kind of followed her since. That was about 3-4 years ago. And I've seen kind of her career flourish. And there's also a 5-minute highlight on her on YouTube that I really recommend watching. McKinsey did like a highlight of her, like demystifying design leadership. And I got a little bit of a backstory of her and how she, from when she was little, she kind of designed this house for her dog. And she was always kind of into this kind of area. And yeah, she's also an advisor at Google Ventures, and she kind of advises startups in how to solve design challenges. Yeah, so yeah, she's brilliant. And I also feel like she's very humble as well, in the sense that often a lot of people, when you get to kind of that level, I do sense a lot of ego. But she's kind of like the opposite. She's very kind of humble and just shares her knowledge. And I love that in one of her talks, she was kind of talking about the journey that a host goes through at Airbnb and what happens. I think it was called When Design Goes Offline. And as a designer, you don't really have much control over what happens after someone kind of left the app and is in a home. So yeah, that was a really good talk. And at the end, the kind of host asked her, if you could give any device to the Airbnb host, what would it be? And I sensed my ego coming in, being like, this is such a stupid question. I was like, how does that, like, that makes no sense. But she kind of like answered it so eloquently, and she said, well, everyone already has a mobile, and we want our design to be part of what they're already doing. We don't want to kind of add steps for the sake of adding steps. And it was just like such a brilliant, eloquent answer that I would have probably been like, we don't, I just wouldn't give them an additional device. Why would I do that? So yeah, I'm a really big fan, as you can tell. And when we kind of were doing the homework for this, I wanted to also highlight Erica Hall. I'm currently reading Just Enough Research, which is one of her books. She also wrote Conversational Design, which is another great book. But she is a huge advocate for user research and for doing as little user research as you need, and for kind of demystifying what user research is and kind of taking away this conception that it's like this massive thing that will take a lot of time and will cost a lot of money. And she's a really funny speaker and a really funny writer. And she asks very important questions in a very non-offensive way, in a way. But she always asks really good questions. So yeah, Erica Hall is my honorary mention as well. But yeah, that's me.
Nice. Thank you so much for sharing. I think it's super insightful to hear about, you know, what really inspires you and the fact that you've done a lot of reading and also like watching all these different videos in the background just to get, you know, a sense of how they lead their teams. And I think that's so interesting. So my pick for this episode is Marissa Louie. So she's currently a design director at Expedia, but she's also been at Apple and Yahoo in the past. And she's also actually kind of co-founded her own startup on the side. It's called Animoodles. I don't know if anyone has heard of it. They're these like really cute little like stuffed toys for children that you can pull apart, and they're basically magnetic. So you can have a version of, you know, maybe like a little squirrel or a turtle, and you can essentially like pull the body parts. I know it sounds a bit weird when I say it like that, but essentially, you know, they're sort of magnetic, so you can fit different body parts of animals together to create like lots of different variations of like a simple stuffed toy. I think she's really interesting just because she's done so many different things in her career. And I found out about Marissa because of Clubhouse, actually. I was just trying to look for really amazing UX designers to follow and to be part of the community conversations on Clubhouse. And Marissa actually hosts quite a few different rooms. So I sat in on one where she was talking about her experience working for such a big company like Expedia, you know, and just trying to lead the design function. I just think it's really interesting to hear these insights from her as someone who's at that kind of senior level. And she was talking about how, because now she's kind of at, you know, a more senior leadership level, rather than sort of like speaking directly to users or being sort of hands-on and involved in that day-to-day design work, she's thinking a lot more about, you know, how the design function fits into a big company, and also just trying to set out the strategic direction for designers, but also thinking a lot about the design process and helping to break that down and almost creating like models for what types of processes designers would use. So for example, if there's a specific business problem or a specific thing that needs to be done, like a product or feature that needs to be built very quickly, you know, do we go into an agile sprint so that we focus on building these things really quickly? Or for more long-term goals, she's trying to think about how her team can conduct that user research and then kind of, you know, proceed through that standard sort of design framework. So I think it was really interesting just to hear her insights on how design at a big company like Expedia works, and also how sometimes, you know, they have a lot of these existing structures in place like design systems just to make sure that designers can pull, you know, any screens really quickly together. So I thought it was really interesting to hear her talk about that from that point of view. And the other thing that really resonated with me was that when I was reading some articles, she had an interview with InVision where she was talking about how she came up with the concept for Animoodles. And it is just really similar to, I guess, how we would try and work on a UX project. So being really aware of the fact that you have to talk to your users. And in this case, her users were children. So she actually worked together. She kind of took it back to the drawing board, first of all, by, you know, just coming up with all these ideas, not really limiting herself. I think having all these like blue sky thinking ideas and just discussing the ideas of creating a stuffed toy with some friends. And, you know, I think it was her husband who said, why don't you use something like magnets? And I think initially she wasn't sure if they were going to go down that route. She thought maybe, you know, we could use Velcro rather than magnets. But they actually built lots of different prototypes of these stuffed toys. And it was really cool because she roped in some people who previously worked at Pixar and Disney as well to kind of help with that character development. And from, you know, sort of like bare sketches, they turned it into an actual prototype that they could interact with. And then they actually went and tested that with kids. And I thought it was so interesting because she was saying how the kids really, really liked the stuffed toys and they really liked the magnets as well. So much so that when it was time for the testing session to be over and she had to take back the prototypes, the kids started crying. And like, that's when, you know, she knew this is actually quite a good product, because unlike with adults, right, kids can't really filter their emotions as well. So you know that if they do have quite extreme reactions, then that's exactly what you want to be getting. And I thought just like reading the article and her taking her time to explain how she went through that design process, but in this case for a physical product, I thought that was really, really insightful. But she's also like built this community of designers focused on collective career development. It's called Designers Guild on Facebook, and I just recently joined because I only found out about it like 2 days ago. It's really interesting how designers from all over the world essentially use that as a platform to share any challenges they might have, and people just kind of comment with like, people just leave comments with any helpful tips that have worked for them, and I thought that was really great. I just feel like she wears so many different hats. She still sounds really accessible, and I think the fact that, you know, she has a lot of creative side projects going on, that is really inspirational for me as well. And maybe, I know I did say a third reason, and I guess maybe a final reason would just be that as someone from, I think, an Asian background, as an Asian American in the United States, for me, it's a very powerful role model, just because I guess I am, you know, in the UK at least, I would be considered a minority, and, you know, from a sort of maybe less well represented background. And so I think, like, for me, picking someone of color who is in such a prominent position in design was really important to me.
I am so impressed by Katie Dill, Erica Hall, Marissa Louis, and I love Anna Moodles. First of all, the name is amazing, but I also love the opportunity it's provided for like mothers and fathers to, you know, ask their kid to come lend them a hand in the kitchen or help them out, and the kid can just like snap off the animal's limb, the animoodle's limb, and just chuck it across the kitchen and say, yeah, no, I'm lending you a hand. So I just really appreciate that comedic moment. And like, as you know from previous episodes, I'm obsessed with throwing Beanie Babies. So I think even throwing like fragments of Beanie Babies is an added challenge in workshops. So we love it.
I feel like you're giving us a glimpse of how you were as a child. Very literal. Yeah. Very like, I'm throwing this hand across the room.
I swear all my Beanie Babies are still intact, that they are not like severely maimed, but yeah, I think that's such a great kind of creative outlet. And I'm just so impressed that what these women seem to have in common is that kind of willingness to kind of learn and keep on creating, but also that kind of humble style of leadership where they're still, even if they're really senior, they're still kind of quite accessible. And I so, so respect that in women. Mm-hmm. So then the person I would love to highlight is Charlie Marie. As someone with a severe YouTube addiction, I think I'm the only person in the world that pays for YouTube Premium, just so simply I can like listen to more YouTube when like my screen is clicked off, because it's just such an all-consuming facet of my life. But yeah, Charlie Marie is such a great content creator. So she's got the most ambiguous accent I've ever heard, because she's born in New Zealand, then is like half British and is living her best life in Spain. And she's a web and graphic designer. And she's currently serving as the creative director at ConvertKit. And then like on the side, she's got this amazing YouTube channel called Charlie Marie TV. And then she's also got a podcast called Design Life. And she does like a lot of vlog style things where she shares like her week, I'm just amazed at the amount of content she can churn out while also having like a job and having so many creative endeavors. She's so authentic, which I think is really the key to success. Like, even though this is such a small thing, and like even if it is kind of a sexist aside, I'm just so impressed that like she'll do her vlogs like without makeup and then in makeup, and she's just that authentic that it's not, you know, like full glam produced, that it's really about her emotions, her journey, the work. And so she does also a bunch of kind of educational content, so a lot on teaching people Figma, DIYs. She did this amazing one where you get to spray paint your keyboard all like different colors. And I think with her, the thing is really the process. And I'm just so thankful that she shares the behind the scenes of everything in such an authentic way. Also, she's like designed a font just casually. So just someone who's very authentic, shows you the process, has that kind of visibility, all with the world's most ambiguous accent. So nothing but love and respect for Charlie Marie.
Yeah, Charlie is brilliant. And I feel like her friend and podcast co-host deserves an honorary mention as well, Femke. She does more like product design related content. She has a YouTube channel as well that has honestly really helped me when I was applying for jobs and stuff. She, similarly to Charlie, is really transparent with her process. And she has kind of videos on each part of the kind of hiring process, and honestly it's been so helpful. The two of them are like such a great duo, and they're brilliant. And yeah, I just wanted to sneak in another great woman in design as an opportunity.
So many fantastic women, and we definitely need more women in design, because we've got some examples of unintentional, I hope, sexism in design, especially with regards to how products are designed, and seeing men as the default, especially like when doing kind of user testing. So Caroline Criado Perez has a great book called Invisible Women, and the book explores kind of everyday objects, technologies, even experiences, and looks at how if the design process is only geared kind of towards men or user testing, you end up with ultimately quite dangerous and non-inclusive products. So the one that like is really highlighted in the book, and you might have heard about this, but it's seatbelts, and how all the crash test dummies are like based after men. So even in those like early stages of kind of testing car safety, it's already like a bit problematic for women, especially like if women tend to be shorter than men, like where the seatbelt kind of falls on them, which can be dangerous. It looks at like distance from airbags. So if men are taller, they tend to be further back. And with women, you know, moving their seats closer and having the seatbelts higher up, when the airbags go off, they tend to really have more of a kind of severe impact and break more bones for women, and like sternums and all that. And then of course a whole nother aspect is, and I don't know if it's for kind of like health reasons, but really excluding pregnant women from kind of testing, or at least like considerations. So it's kind of astonishing to see the number of products that really completely ignore or forget about pregnant women.
I can't relate to this, but I also feel like they're not exactly designed for people with breasts, like large breasts. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's uncomfortable even for me, and I'm not in that category. But
have you ever seen, there's like infomercials for this thing called the Titty Bear, which is like this plush like little kind of teddy bear thing that you put on a seatbelt that's supposed to be like really cute, but is ultimately yikes, that like helps to make seatbelts more comfortable for women and like more adjustable. But it is, wow, like a little teddy bear like hanging off your chest, which is also a leak. Yeah. But not a leak I want.
Yeah, exactly.
They also found that AI assistants are often tested using male voices and therefore have like a male bias. So they are less likely to be accurate when a woman is using them.
Wow. But
which is not great.
They make the AI assistants women all the time. So,
which, yeah, it is also not necessarily the best thing. Though I have in the past changed my Siri to a guy and I called him Suro. which I think even if you change the name to actually like male, it's still Siri, but
yeah,
I tried to make it work.
It's not like Alexa, I guess.
Would be
Alex.
But yeah. Alex is a fairly gender neutral name, to be honest.
Yeah,
I would agree. I like to name my personas Alex and Sam and all of the gender neutral names.
Oh, yeah, that's very good.
Yeah,
that's a really good point. Yeah, I think just kind of going back to that about AI assistants being trained on male-based data or like male-biased data, that probably explains why whenever I try to, I don't have an AI assistant, but that maybe explains why if I try to say something, it doesn't always pick up. No, I'm sure that's not true. It's probably just my accent and not my gender.
You need to be like, Alexa, play Wonderwall.
Now I know. But yeah, that's so fascinating, actually, because I think that's really interesting because obviously, you know, everything that we use, it's kind of accessible to the general population, but the fact that they don't really test or take into account women's experiences of it means that effectively they're kind of making women really invisible. And yeah, I guess it's just something to be aware of, especially for us as product designers. You know, how do we ensure that we're representing like diverse groups or the needs of diverse user groups whenever we design something? And I feel like this has been talked about a lot, but you know, your point about personas earlier on, like Lavinia, I think whenever we try to come up with personas or whenever we try to interview people in the user research process, it's like always I think, you know, we probably have some awareness of it, but it's probably quite useful to think about representing like diverse user groups and making sure, you know, we have a fairly even gender split. The other point I just wanted to add on is that of accessible language or gender inclusive language. I think often when we think about UX design, it tends to be, you know, very much on like building a product and maybe focusing on the aesthetics of what this thing is going to look like. But as we talked about in earlier episodes as well, actually UX writing and content design is so important, and that really affects the user experience as well. And I think by gender inclusive language, for me, it would just be things like not assuming that the default is masculine all the time, making sure that, you know, we're not saying like his or him when maybe that can be replaced by a more gender neutral pronoun such as they. I know that increasingly people are using things like, you know, actor rather than using the sort of female gendered form of that, like actress. And also, whenever we like build forms, for example, just giving people a plurality of choices. So if they don't want to identify necessarily as like Mr. or like Miss, you know, because those are very clearly like binary genders, like they can choose to identify with the title that suits them the most. And I think just having that gender inclusive and accessible language, again, really contributes to making people feel included when we build these products.
I love that. Great point, Yusin. And especially being able to have the choice. And when I'm given the choice of kind of a prefix for my name, if it does not matter, I will pick Reverend or Doctor or Lady. So I have a lot of fun with like really minor pieces of mail.
Oh, hey, that reminds me of the time that I had to complete like my account for Thames Water when I first moved into my flat. And it was just, like, I don't mean to slate them, but the UX is just so bizarre. Like, I was trying to fill this form and, like, I guess, you know, I was trying to put in, like, Miss before my last name. And I didn't have, those options weren't available. It was so weird. It was, like, Sir, Lord, Lady, like, Doctor, Reverend. Her Royal Highness. And I was like, I think one of them was so ridiculous. It was like Captain or something. I was like, where are they getting these families from? Like, where, Captain, like, what kind of weird database?
I mean, the UK is amazing for that. Like, in Canada, it was like Mr., Miss., Mrs. But then here, because like in the UK, there are like so many crazy titles, especially if you go to like Fordham and Mason's like online website, or like a posh kind of online website where they would have like Duchess. Like, a Duchess could order some smoked salmon from there. It's amazing. And when it doesn't matter, I totally lean into it, which I think is mail fraud, but I'm also living my best life.
Did you just admit that?
Yeah.
On a public
lock platform. Me up, put me in the Tower of London. And so now we've got our hotline design hotline question from a fantastic lady.
Hey, Hotline Design, I'm Nicole, a longtime listener and first-time caller. I'm a product owner and proud woman in tech who has experienced some minor instances of sexism in the workplace. I want to know what your experiences have been with sexism in the workplace, and how have you confronted them or handled it?
Amazing, amazing question, Nicole. Thank you so much for calling in. So fortunately, I've only experienced like microaggressions in the workplace, and you know, just stuff like, oh, you're the woman, so you organize the card, or kind of if you're working with like older man, they kind of see you as like default secretary. But that could also be in a way because I start off in the most junior position, and I find that to kind of combat that, I actually dress very masculine in the workplace. The bigger the shoulder pads, the better, in my opinion. But I guess one bit of kind of sexism in the workplace that really does bother me, and it's something I periodically pick up and really try to kind of campaign against. But when we used to go into the office, I guess the company that works with managing the office, so they're separate from the company that we work for, so they've got these women that work at reception on the ground floor, and they're in these all red uniforms, which fine, it's very like kind of Pan Am flight attendant. But what I really dislike is that kind of from 8:30 till 9 in the mornings when we used to go into the office, it was part of their job to stand at the top of the like short stairs up and greet people. But because this is London and the city, no one said good morning. Everyone was kind of rushing to get into work. So ultimately they were just like decorative women, and I would always say hi to them. But I ultimately think I would love to have a conversation with them to see if this is something they like. It's worth checking, but I get the perception that, you know, they have better things that they could be doing. They could be kind of getting through some of their tasks for the day. And I don't like the idea that they've probably been instructed to just stand there and be decorative. So that's really something that I need to do more work into researching, but really grinds my gears, especially because we go up a few floors and we're in quite a progressive workplace. Where there's a lot of gender equality, but it always seems to be women. They do have men at reception, but they're never the ones greeting. So I just think, what year is it? 2021 now. So I really think we need to get rid of this idea of like decorative women, especially when I know they've got a ton of things to get through in the day. And I just don't think it's a good use of their time. And it just seems quite uncomfortable.
Yeah, I haven't noticed this actually, probably because whenever I was going into the office I was late. So you said 8:30 to 9?
No, yeah, decorative just, women for was, you, Lavinia.
I was there at like 9:15, so I was just like always late. But yeah, I've never noticed. I did notice that they were always in red and like red lipstick, and always kind of, it was probably part of their job to always have their makeup done and everything. Which I guess you wouldn't tell a man receptionist to do. But yeah.
Full drag. Full beat.
Yeah.
And is it just me, or were they like almost always in heels? I don't know if I remember correctly.
Yeah. But... it's like a red pencil skirt, a like red like cropped blazer, red heels, hair in a bun. It is so Pan Am. Like all they're missing is like the little scarf. And it like it's a look. Like they look great, but I just hope it's not solely for decorative reasons, because these are women and not accessories. So
Definitely I think, you know, the kind of the way you broke it down makes a lot of sense, because obviously I don't think it's a productive use of anyone's time, and also the fact that, you know, it's overwhelmingly women who always get to play that sort of front-facing role and be that person who just stands there. I do think it's super bizarre and definitely like a very strange practice. I'm hoping that by the time we go back into the office, whenever that may be, you know, that's probably something that isn't going to exist anymore. I don't know.
It's extremely outdated. So, and it's something that I didn't notice for the first year. And then one day I just came in and I was like, but why? And it's like, have you ever just stood like at like in a place and just had a ton of people pass you by? And it's not like you're on your phone or anything. You just have to stand there. It's supremely awkward. And I just feel really bad for them.
That reminds me of the time I wore like this blue dragon onesie and tried to raise funds for a charity trip in university at Liverpool Street Station. It was awful.
Yeah.
I completely empathize.
And like no one's going to stop because they're like pulling a Lavinia and are late for work. No, just kidding. But like everyone's rushing. So if anything, they're not only are they like decorative women, but like technically speaking, like obstacles for some people that are trying to run up the stairs. And women just shouldn't be obstacles or decorative.
I totally get you. And applaud the fact that you even noticed, as you can tell. I didn't even realize.
Yeah. It's like when you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And I rant about it like every time that there's a survey. And I realize this is like in a way out of the control of our company. But at the same time, like I really hope they can feed back, because it just to go from like decorative women on the first floor to then like a very progressive working space like a couple floors up just seems so wrong that we've almost traveled through time when we go into the lift.
Yeah, I totally get you. The fact that I didn't notice, I guess, can transition into kind of my problem. I feel like I don't have a good observation filter for sexism in the workplace. I think I was telling you when we were preparing for this episode, I don't realize when someone is sexist towards me, and then I have other people tell me. Often, if someone is being the opposite of nice, like just rude or mean or dismissive, I just assume that person is just an asshole. But I don't necessarily think, oh, they're acting this way towards me because I'm a woman. And someone... I probably need like little hints, or like maybe see the interaction with the man and then I maybe piece it together, which I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but I don't notice. I do think in the workplace though, I often after a few years of my career, I think because I'm from a Eastern European background, I'm very kind of abrupt and to the point and everything else. And I have been kind of pulled aside and called either angry at one point, someone asked me if I have anger issues, or I was asked to maybe like tone it down or something. And I feel like my male colleagues are so much more allowed to kind of be abrupt and to the point. Obviously I would never like want people to shout at people, although I don't know if I ever done that. I don't want people to be angry either. But I did feel like when it was coming from me, it seemed a lot more aggressive when it was quite the minor thing. But my male colleagues were doing that like on the daily. So I don't know. That would probably be my only kind of sort of example. And then another one popped into my head. It was when I was doing my internship. The guys on my internship, they were in their 20s, so maybe that's like, yeah, why? But they were rating the girls and like making snaky comments, which I always felt very uncomfortable with, and I kind of went like on my separate way and never talked to them again. But I am a little bit disappointed that I probably should have just said something and be like, oi.
Rate their personalities.
Yeah.
No. On a scale of 0 to trash.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And every time the guys showed up as trash.
I remember there was one of these girls on our star group that was honestly really, really beautiful. And her boyfriend came over and they started like making snaky comments, being like, oh, she could be with someone so much better. And like basically making her whole thing about how pretty she was and like denigrating her choice in men. And just like, I don't know, things like that made me very uncomfortable. And I just stopped hanging out with them. But yeah, I feel like now, after a few years, I would probably just kind of call that behavior out. But at the time, I was like not willing to. But it would be things like that rather than very kind of, yeah, workplace related things.
How about you, Yusin?
Yeah, I was going to say like thanks both for, I guess, kind of sharing your personal experiences. And also to Nicole for asking this question, right? Because I think it really kickstarts a much needed conversation about how to fight or like combat sexism in the workplace. And I just want to say, Lavinia, that sounds pretty horrifying. I mean, it would be so unpleasant to work with people like that who are so, I think, superficial and also just quite disrespectful in general. I've personally had quite an extreme experience. Yeah, it wasn't definitely to me, but I did work with someone more senior than me for quite a long period of time. I mean, I guess there's no fear that he'll ever listen to this podcast because we don't keep in touch, thank God. But apart from being quite, I think, unprofessional and not necessarily like the best at handling client relationships, he also said quite a few sexist things at work about other people that we worked with. And it was just very frustrating because I think, like, you know, Lauren, you mentioned, I do think where we work is generally quite a progressive place. And, you know, there are lots of people constantly tell you that there are lots of avenues to seek help if you ever feel like you're alone at work. Or, you know, there are lots of extracurricular groups that really seek to champion inclusion and diversity. So it was especially jarring when I was on a project with my colleague, and, you know, he would just make some frankly very sexist remarks about how attractive some person in the office was, like right in front of everyone, and just really, really unprofessional. I was super irked by that, so I actually did try to raise it or like escalate it. And I mean, so eventually my colleague was sort of, you know, I think someone a bit more senior to him on the project did have a chat with him. And, you know, I think it kind of like, he definitely sort of toned it down a bit more. And I think he just wasn't very self-aware. And I think that just really helped him. And I think that was good because, you know, I just found those sorts of conversations very difficult to approach one-on-one. I think now, having, you know, worked for a few more years and probably hopefully becoming a bit more wiser, I think I would definitely have said something like immediately just to sort of shut it down. But I think me being so junior at the time and just working with someone that, you know, I thought was pretty much my line manager and who was in charge of the project, I just thought that sort of power dynamic didn't make it very easy for me to speak up about how I felt. And I think now, like, I would definitely, like, kind of shut it down or say quite diplomatically and fairly that, you know, those sorts of comments aren't really, like, professional or not something we should be saying in the workplace, because it just creates such an uncomfortable environment to work in. And then when you were talking about reception, I just suddenly remembered this thing from ages ago where one day I forgot my pass to the office, and so I went to reception and tried to get a temporary pass. And the reception, the guy at reception was so creepy. He was like a 60-year-old man, and he was just like, oh, can I ask you where you're from? Because you're like so beautiful. Like, he said it in this really slow, like creepy-ass voice. And I was just like, oh my God, this is horrible. Like, I mean, yeah, this person was first of all like probably old enough to be my granddad, and secondly, it was just so weird that I would have to that something like that would happen to me at work. Like, it was just so strange. Like, I'm sad to say that I didn't really do anything about it, because although I was really like creeped out, I wasn't really sure like what the best way to address that sort of situation would be. So I ended up just like, every time I saw this person at reception, I would just like consciously avoid him. And I think, do you have any thoughts on what you would do in that sort of situation? Like, I guess it was, if it was a sort of like offhanded remark or like an offhand comment, then I guess I'd just kind of ignore it unless it happened again. And then, you know, I'd try and like maybe escalate that somehow by contacting facilities. But yeah, that was my experience.
I was going to say, you genuinely like don't have to feel bad or anything for not having done anything different. Like, I think often men don't realize how unsafe these kind of interactions can make us feel. Like, I think a lot of men would just defend that as, oh, he just paid her a compliment. But in that situation, you were at work, you needed help from him, so it was with the pass. So it already is making it a tiny bit uncomfortable because you need something from this person and they just made you feel uncomfortable. And yeah, it's honestly, it just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, why is this reception on the ground floor? Like, actually, it seems like for everyone stuck in the 1960s. Like, what is this weird time warp around this like one circular desk?
Yeah.
No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it was obviously, I mean, I guess just to end on a positive note, right? I think thankfully it was a sort of like single instance of this happening. And, you know, like we say, I think generally at work, I do feel that I am accorded a lot of respect and people tend to, you know, not focus as much on your gender. It is, you know, a pretty positive working environment. I think maybe tying it back to what, you know, you said just now about how you often have to portray yourself as being more masculine or, you know, just kind of being treated differently when you do express your emotions. There are a lot of expectations placed on women because I feel like in the workplace, women are generally seen as like the nice ones and you often have to embody those sorts of traits. So if you're a bit more like direct or you kind of step out of line with what's expected of you, then people have these weird reactions. And I think even women themselves have sort of unconscious biases as to how other women should behave in the workplace. And I think I'm aware that, you know, I might have some of those preconceived notions as well. And it's something that I'm constantly trying to challenge, or like, you know, if I feel strongly about how someone behaves in the workplace, because I think that's not in line with how they act according to their gender, then obviously I do think I need to take a step back and think about why I'm feeling that way and try and just challenge my own internal misconceptions.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, I feel like that's so eloquent. This is kind of, feminism is actually, I find, quite a hard thing to talk about, because other than like respecting women, I find that there's such variation. I find that there are almost like no right answers, because we're all individuals and things are all different for everyone. So it's so hard to like make blanket statements outside of like really respecting women and hopefully treating them no differently than kind of any other person, especially like in the workforce. So yeah, really like appreciate the insights on today's episode. And just to say, happy International Women's Day. And thank you so much, Nicole, for calling in with your question. I know it was a bit long-winded, but we certainly appreciate it. And as always, if you'd like to be featured on Hotline Design Hotline, you can reach out at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. And then you can find us at Hotline Design Pod on Instagram and hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much, everyone. Catch you next week.
Perfect.
Thank you. Catch you next week.
Bye.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.